Hello, and welcome to another dollop of retrospection. In this episode, we're swinging through the jungle of Bengala with the pulptastic Adventures of the Phantom from 1996. I'm Colin. Oh, God, you're pretty in those woodsy flannels.
Thank you. I'll do my best for you.
No, woodsy flannels used to be your nickname at school.
We're doing that one again. I think I might have that joke later on in my notes.
Oh, well. Keep whichever one's funniest.
Oh, use them both. When has that ever stopped us?
True.
Mm-hmm. And my name's Paul, and don't be too hard on yourself. We all make mistakes.
We do. I just pretend they don't happen.
Like this podcast. Yeah. Never a truer word. Yep.
TMDB says, the 21st successor to the role of Bengala's resident superhero must travel to New York to prevent a rich madman from obtaining those magic skulls that would give him the secret to ultimate power.
Do you know what? I had a feeling that this film was going to be like really complicated, but it really isn't.
No, that was it then.
Yeah. I know. Yes.
Why did you think it was going to be complicated?
I don't know. I had a feeling it was going to be complicated plot. But
you've seen this before, though.
Long time ago. Yeah.
All right. It stars Billy Zane as the Phantom and Kit Walker, Christy Swanson as Diana Palmer, Treat Williams as Xander Drax, Catherine Zeta-Jones as Sela. Oh, remember in our previous episode we talked about what I'd sell my soul for?
Oh yes.
Well.
Treat Williams.
With what? Well, you know what? Never mind. I've changed my mind. It doesn't matter. Maybe next time.
Already?
Yeah. James Remar as Quill. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa as the Great Kabai Seng. Bill Smitrovich as Uncle Dave Perma. And Casey Siemasgo. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. Do you?
It's about right. Yeah, go with it.
Okay. As Morgan. And Patrick McGowan as the Phantom's old man.
I'd forgotten he was in this.
So did I.
It must have been one of his last things. When did he die?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I think he did a Columbo after this, when Columbo came back. He was a Columbo favourite. I think he did a few of them. He directed some as well, I think.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I always forget that he directed some stuff. Yeah.
So, this was towards the end, yeah.
Because when we get into the start of the film, it opens with a narration with Patrick McGowan doing the narration. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, I know that voice. Who is that? And I could hear things going around and around in my head.
And it wasn't the voice that's usually going
around.
It wasn't.
It was a different
head.
One. Yeah.
No, different voice.
And all I could hear in my head was someone shouting, I am not a number. And I'm thinking,
what? That's a big clue.
Yeah, I know. And I'm thinking, it's that guy, isn't it? It's that guy. And then it clicked. Yeah.
Oh, all right. It clicked when his name came up on the credits.
Oh, I don't look at things like credits.
Blazoned across the screen.
I wasn't looking at that.
All right.
It's amazing. I was looking at the film.
Right. Why?
Well, you know what I'm like.
Yeah, that's
easily
true.
Distracted.
Got confused. Yeah. Got confused by a Carry On film once.
I did, yeah, more than once.
Never lived it down. Yeah. Okay. Screenplay by Jeffrey Boehm and directed by Simon Winsor.
Yeah, Simon Winsor, he directed lots of episodes of Young Indiana Jones. A couple of those Tom Selleck Western movies, you know, Quigley, and I think there was a couple of other ones as well.
What? He directed Quigley Down Under?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I like that film.
Yeah, so do I. Free Willy. No, don't.
Don't. Oh, yeah, no.
Don't do it.
There's rules about that.
A movie that we've talked about possibly doing for the podcast in the future, Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, directed that.
Is it Marlboro Man or Marlboro Kid?
Marlboro Man, isn't it?
Is it? Okay.
I think so.
All right.
Daryl, you remember Daryl from the 80s, the computer
thing? Yep.
And he directed a really good little movie that I like called Harley Quinn. I think it's in 1980. It's kind of like a weird supernatural type movie with Robert Powell. So check that one out.
Done quite a few things.
Yeah. So he's had hits. He's had not so hits, but
Haven't we all?
We have. I wonder which one this ended up being. Well, we'll talk about it in a minute, won't we?
Well, yeah. Executive producer is Joe Dante.
Yeah, he was going to direct it at one point as well, but then he had to back out.
He did, yeah, mm-hmm. And he worked on the script.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, his executive producer credit, I think it's just the fact they had to do that. It didn't really have anything to do with this version of the film.
Was it like when Steven Spielberg turned up on the set of Sequest DSV, put the hat on, had his picture taken, and then went home, and that was it?
I don't think Joe Dante even turned up. I think it was just because of the amount of work he'd previously done in it. Because mm-hmm. it was supposed to be more comedic.
Yeah, I get that.
And Joe Dante said they left the jokes in, but they played it straight for some reason. He doesn't quite know why.
I'm sure we'll talk about whether that works or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sergio Leone at one point had interest in the property and he'd started to write the script and look for locations for the film version.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a less family-orientated movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Less jokes.
Less jokes, more blood.
Yeah, that's your motto in life.
That's what I want on my tombstone.
What? Just more blood?
No, less jokes.
Okay. Oh, there'll be jokes at your funeral.
Oh,
don't worry.
If you're there, then there definitely will be. Yeah.
Joel Schumacher was considered to be director at one point.
Yeah, I've got three words for you. Batman and Robin, and we'll leave it there.
Best Batman film.
You know what? You're still going down this line. You're still feeding this to me. It's been how many years now?
I don't even believe it myself. I like to hear the chorus of anguish in the distance when I say it.
Never has a man's face looked less committed to the words that are coming out of his mouth, Colin.
Yeah. Yeah, this film was made in New York City, Thailand, and Australia.
There's some great location work.
There is.
It looks fantastic at times. I'll give it that.
And oddly, it was supposed to be filmed in Hawaii, but filming it in these other locations actually lowered the budget by $12
million. Still didn't help in the long run, did it?
No, we should point out this film was a flop.
Yeah, it. I've got the figures actually.
Give me the numbers.
So the movie was going to be a trilogy, but then it only grossed $23 million on a $45 million budget.
But has become a cult favorite in video rentals and the like.
It has, and I was going to say, I mean, can you imagine making one of these type of movies now for $45 million?
No.
Yeah, no?
No.
Couldn't happen.
So this film, I kind of lump in with The Shadow and The Rocketeer. To me, it's those kind of films. Now, I'm not saying the quality is the same or whatever, but it's got that, I don't know what it is. It's got that kind of vibe, energy about it.
Yeah, I would probably, some other films that I'd probably put into that category, one in particular that really reminded me of this film is Doc Savage.
Ah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And maybe the Mummy movies, particularly the first one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Good call.
What do you think about putting Dick Tracy in this kind of category as well? I'm not talking about the quality of the movie. I'm just talking about the feel of it.
All right, maybe, yes, okay.
What about League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? I know it's a terrible movie, but...
I get where you're coming from. I've only ever seen that once when it came out. Never seen it since. I would have to revisit it, but I see where you're coming from with that.
I find it similar in tone. And even, like, going back to... not that long ago, something like Captain America, the First Avenger. Got the same kind of feel as this movie.
Yeah.
I've lost you now. I brought the MCU into it, didn't I? I can see you glaze over.
No. We're done.
What about the Indiana Jones movies?
Now, this is interesting because I feel the Indiana Jones movies are a step up from these. It's like there's tiers of films. Mm-hmm. There's tiers of B-movie type pulp action adventure films and the Shadow. But then The Rocketeer. Is The Rocketeer as good as the Indiana Jones? I love The Rocketeer.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, so maybe you could just... Maybe it's a big Venn diagram.
And it all, yeah, I'm sure there is, and it all links together, definitely. But I get what you're saying about the Indiana Jones movies. I think that's just because they just seem a lot slicker than what this is.
Yeah. You know?
But they're only pulp movies at the end of the day.
And I think that's it. They have a pulpy feel to them, that 1930s Republic serial type feel.
Definitely. And I do think that this film does pull that off. We'll talk about it at the end, obviously, but it does pull that off. Billy Zane apparently had a muscle suit made for this movie.
It did, but...
He didn't need to wear it because he worked out so much that he was quite stacked, apparently.
Yeah.
And we should say that he was a big fan of the character. He was a fan of the comic strip as well.
Didn't he study the comic strip for the kind of idea of the way the character stands or looks and performs? Yeah.
And I think that he even tried the, because in the comic strip he wears kind of like stripy underpants.
Oh, the kind you wear.
Yeah, exactly, the kind I'm wearing now, Colin. I'll show you.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
Oh, that's okay.
Are you sure?
Oh no, no. Yeah.
And they tried
it. Just amazed you put any on. Usually don't bother when we're doing a podcast.
This is true. I mean, it is an audio medium. Can't see me. So.
It is? Yeah. No, no.
Good job we're not on YouTube. That's all I'll say.
Like, old Arthur, feel the breeze.
Arthur? Yeah. He doesn't like an Arthur.
He does.
But they tried it with the stripy underpants, and it just looked a bit silly. So they didn't do that.
Fair enough.
But I think he was up for it.
Yeah? I mean, you got to try these things.
Absolutely. Apparently he used to wear his super suit when he went out to get snacks in between filming.
Now, is that because it was just difficult to put on and take off, or just because he felt he liked it?
It is rather tight. Yeah. So, you know, I would imagine it was difficult to get off once it was on. Can you imagine how he used to go to the toilet? I bet that was a mission in itself. Unless he had a flap.
Yeah.
Could have had a flap.
One of the great unanswered questions of our time, Paul.
But when we get Billy Zane on, we'll ask him about it.
Yeah, we will.
If you're listening, Billy. I mean, you can't be doing much these days.
Paul wants to ask you if you had a flap.
Yeah, absolutely. Bruce Campbell was considered for the lead at one point.
Now, if Bruce Campbell was in it, it'd have to be more comedic.
Oh, definitely.
And not played as straight, which I'm going to talk about that later as well.
Yeah, I think I've got stuff to say about that as well.
I think we'll have a different opinion.
Oh, okay. Dolph Lundgren was attached to it at one point in the 80s when they were thinking about trying to do it. He's too big, isn't he? I mean, physically. It wouldn't have looked right.
Yes. No.
Jenny McCarthy and Jennifer Lopez both auditioned for the part of Salah.
Oh, yeah, both good actors. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the version that I would have loved to have seen, and I'm sure that you would have as well, is that back in the 70s, apparently they got quite into pre-production on a very low budget Phantom movie that would have starred Adam West as the Phantom.
Oh, that would have been nice, wouldn't it?
It would have indeed, wouldn't it? You can see where they would have gone with that.
Yeah, definitely. That would have been more Joe Dante.
Oh, definitely. And there's times in this movie when I was watching it where Billy Zane would say certain lines and he would say them in a very Adam West kind of way. And I thought to myself, I can see it. Yeah, it would have worked.
Yeah.
Would have worked for us anyway, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
The Phantom comic strip actually predates people. They're not real people. They are to me. But
wait. It predates people. The dinosaurs made it, did they, Paul?
It predates.
Like, wait, Bernie, what? I mean, you're a Diplodocus. I'm a T-Rex. Why are you drawing these weird, like, two-armed, two-legged people in these Phantom comic strips, mate? And you know what? I have trouble turning the pages because of my little arms.
Purple? You really going to go with purple?
Yeah, it's purple. Well, that other dinosaur, that, what's he called, Bernisaurus or something, he's purple.
That is true, yes.
So I just copied that.
That is true.
All right.
No, it predates characters like Batman and Superman.
1930s?
36 was the
36. Is it true that it's still going?
I think it's going on and off. You know,
as newspaper strip.
I don't know if it's a newspaper, but there's been various comic books over the years and attempts to reboot it and revive it and things like that.
Well, with that exciting conclusion.
Wasn't that exciting, but all right.
No. All right, let's get on with the film.
Okay.
For those who came in late.
I thought that was great. I thought that was nice.
You like that?
It felt like something from back in those days, didn't it? When the cinema used to just roll over and you could go in the middle of a movie and then stay and watch the beginning of it that you missed. Yeah.
Right.
It felt like something like that. Yeah. It fit. It was a nice touch.
Yeah. It did. Yeah. So we get like pirates attacking a ship and a boy washing ashore after he sees his father killed. So we get an interesting action opening.
Yeah, the opening of this tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? I'm not quite sure why the tribe decided to give him this. Well, it's not really a power, is it? But why did they decide to help him like this and turn him into this phantom character?
Well, maybe they're just good-natured people.
Is that what they do? Just turn him, get a random kid and turn him into a superhero. Yeah.
And then we see that we're in the Bengala jungle in 1938, so the eve of the Second World War, sort of. I mean, we're at the phony war period, I suppose.
Bit like what we are now. Bit of politics, eh? Bit of politics.
Boy, we're turning into Ben Elton in your spare time. Good, your jokes about Maggie now.
Yeah, and I'm going to write a musical based on music from a band that aren't around anymore.
Go on, who?
Who would I do it with? Which band would I choose?
If you were gonna write a musical, what band or what songs from that band would you use?
Kajagoogoo.
Jesus. All right. Name me at least, because you know it's a musical. We're talking 90 minutes. Oh, yeah, right. Name me five tracks from them.
Well, the musical would be called Too Shy, obviously.
Because that's the only song you know. Right, but
okay,
go on.
Okay. And then there's the famous Limahl solo track, Never Ending Story.
So now you've already gone from the band in the very second
track. I
never
said I have to research it. I never said that I'm a fan per se. Well,
what I'm saying is, surely you would choose.
Okay, I'll give you a serious answer.
All right, let's have a serious answer. Come on, you're doing a musical, pal. You've been tasked to do a musical, and you're using tracks to illustrate the story and the narrative of the musical, similar to the one that's currently on Broadway, The Heart of Rock and Roll by Huey Lewis and the News. Tickets are available, previews only.
You're not going to get any free ones, all right?
I was hoping I would.
The Doors.
Excellent choice. Now, obviously, the musical is not about the Doors, really. It's about something else. But using the Doors as a backing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I'd make it a science fiction kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. Science fiction. You've got a budget.
Hopefully. If I'm not, I'm screwed. Yeah. It's not happening then. No. What were we talking about? Right. Oh, the Phantom, right.
Oh, yeah, the Phantom. So we're in the Bengala jungle in 1938, and we see two explorers, the thieves.
Scallywags.
Scallywags. Mm-hmm. Good choice there. I like it. Grave robbers as well, I would say.
Scumbags.
Called Quill and Morgan.
Yes.
They're using a map, but they're lost, and there's a native boy that is helping them called Zach.
And one of them's played by James Remar, and he's always he's one of those character actors that's dependable in anything that you stick him in. I think if you've got James Remar in it, then you know you've at least got one good thing in your movie.
You say he's dependable if you stick him in anything. What if you stick him in Coronation Street?
He'd still give a good job, I think. Would he?
So. Yeah.
I mean, he'd look out of place, but
it would. It'd sound a bit odd, wouldn't he?
But
propping up the bar.
Yeah, he could pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet he could. Yeah, they come across a rope bridge. Always got to get get a rope bridge in these films.
I wrote the exact same thing. The exact thing you just said, I wrote down in my notes.
Well, it's true. Got to have a good rope bridge.
It's a bit Temple of Doom-ish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Because they got to get their car across the truck, across the bridge.
It's not the first instance, though, of something in this movie that is a little bit like things in other movies.
All right. Well, I'm relying on you to point that out.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's two other guys, Green and Styles, and they make the boy drive the truck across the bridge. Now, they need this boy to decipher this map, yeah. Right? So the boy, I can understand they're thinking, we don't want to do it, get the boy mm-hmm. to do it. Also, he's lighter than them. But isn't he the most important person in this whole escapade?
He is, but if you...
If he dies, you've got A, no truck, and nobody to decipher the
map.
But
if you die, it doesn't matter anyway, does it?
Hmm. Exactly. You send Green or Styles to drive
that's
the truck.
True. Yeah, one of those. Yeah. Unless you're the leader, anybody else is expendable.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right?
Remind me never to go on an expedition with you. Because I know I'd be driving the truck, wouldn't I?
No, I've seen what you are. So he makes it. That truck's not making it, Paul.
Is it not?
No, hell no.
We'll have a cut out carbs for a few days. I'll be all right.
The minute you get in, the bridge will just disintegrate itself before the truck's even got on it. It's gone, oh no, sorry. I'm not having that on me.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
So they do make it across mm-hmm. this rope bridge, and they eventually have to go on foot. But Zach, he won't go because there's the jungle, mm-hmm. right? It's protected by the ghost that walks.
I've been called that when I've been getting up for a pee at 3 o'clock in the morning.
The ghost that walks?
Yeah. You know, you don't know where you are and you don't know what you're doing. You know, it's 50-50 whether you hit that toilet bowl, you know. So
when you're sober.
When I'm sober, yes.
We see that Quill has a scar on his face, it's like his neck area, that mm-hmm. is the mark of the Phantom.
I presume that it's like his ring, isn't it?
Oh, it's the ring. Yeah, they punched him.
Yeah,
yeah.
When he's been punched really hard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They find an entrance to a cave. Lots of
raiders.
Artifacts raiders. In this cave.
Mm-hmm. Just raiders
laying around.
Mm-hmm.
Skeletons with headdresses, and they find a golden skull.
Yeah, very triggering. For me, after the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull fiasco a few years ago, skulls are triggering for me, especially when they're jeweled.
Oh like yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why is it always skulls? Why can't it be a stone foot? Oh, come on! He's like, hey, Master Craftsman, we need 2 stone feet carved. The evil power it flows forth from the Veruca of Viridium. And then he's captured by the Sock of Sophahanko. Okay? That's what we want. And then the craftsman's got these, he brings out these massive feet. And they're like, why are they so big? You said 2 feet. No, mate. I meant, forget it. We'll just deal with it. We need someone to carry these massive feet now everywhere.
How do you make the power come out? Do you have to, like, rub the big toe or something?
Absolutely. That's what it does. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Give it a tickle. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you tickle the feet with the feather of Antrium.
Oh, you're on it tonight, aren't you? Yeah.
That's what you use. And then the toes curl, and there's a sound. And in the cave, they do it, and in the cave you hear, you have summoned. The feather of Antrium has summoned the spirits of the foot.
Who's playing the spirit? Charles Hawtrey?
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't.
Oh, hello.
that's what he will say, wouldn't it? Yeah. He just tickles it. He goes, oh, hello.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been amazing.
It would.
I guess they pick skulls, though, because they're kind of creepy looking, aren't they?
And
a bit mystical, you know. And they've got eyes that glow.
That's true. They do.
Not real ones. Yeah. Not real skulls. They don't, because they're just skulls.
Mm. Mm. Your eyes glow.
I know where this is going.
Oh, I'm glad you do. I don't.
It depends how much I've had to drink, Colin.
Does it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See, now, but there's always like a level of alcohol. So what is it? Higher alcohol levels compared to slightly lower?
Yes, yes. If I go above a certain point, you know.
It's like a really bad version of speed, right? Well, it has to keep you out. You're driving and you have to keep your alcohol level above a certain level. If it drops, the car explodes. At that point, brandy down you. Keep him drunk. Keep him drunk. Bus is swerving across the street. That's good. No, that's good. It's good that it's swerving. If you could drive in a straight line for 5 seconds, the whole thing's gone. It's just the film's just called Drunk.
I would act the shit out of that. You would? Actually, but I wouldn't be acting, that's the thing.
No, you'd just be real life.
Yeah, real. I'm not making a documentary.
You're not doing a sequel, you're dead by the end of the first film.
So we get like a classic superhero intro scene, don't we, where we just see bits of him. Like we see his eyes and him putting his gun in his holster and
Yeah, we do. But meanwhile, the skeleton strangles Styles.
Yeah, I didn't understand what was happening here. Did the skeleton actually come alive and strangle him then?
Yes.
It did?
Yes,
it wasn't
magic.
Like an elaborate like trap or something.
That's a heck of a trap.
Well, you know, it could be like it connected to like gears and motors or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That's the level of ridiculousness that you'd find in a modern Indiana Jones film, Paul.
That is true. That is very true, yes. Just stick with magic. You don't have to explain it.
Yeah, it's magic. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Not Paul Daniels' magic. As though Debbie McGee doesn't bounce out.
not at any lot. Point. Not a lot.
Yeah, can you imagine that? You like it? Well, actually, not at all, because he's going to struggle. Yeah. There's no liking it.
Yeah, so it strangles him. I'm not criticising it. I can live with it. It's fine. It didn't bother me.
At no point did I think, how is that skeleton strangling that person?
No, I was just waiting for a reveal that it was some kind of trap. I didn't remember that magic was a big part of this movie. So when the Phantom realises that he's needed... Does he just sit in that chair all day waiting?
Yeah, it's just the drumming his fingers on the armrest going, what are we going to do today? Well, you know the lion? Barry? Yeah, Barry. He's fell in a hole. He's fallen in a hole. Oh, he's out. Oh, he is. Oh.
He's halfway out of the chair. Oh, sits back down again.
Yeah, all right. You ever thought we should move somewhere where something's actually happening?
Like New York.
Yeah, like New York. Yeah. That'd be where there's a lot of crime.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's his idea. If he's in the jungle, he doesn't really have to do much.
Oh, he's a panther after your own heart.
Exactly, yeah.
I keep saying panther. I don't know why I said panther. I meant phantom.
Yeah, well, I know why you said panther.
I actually did this during the film. I keep confusing the title with panther. I don't know why.
As long as you don't start referring to Catherine Zeta-Jones as a cougar later on. All right?
I never do that, Paul.
No. Oh, she's not really a cougar at this point in her career, is she, in The Phantom?
Are you allowed to say these things?
Probably not, no. We'll find out, won't we, when this goes out?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, next podcast, just be me on my own.
Watch the ratings soar. purple suit. That's all I'll say. Purple suit.
Like it, don't like it.
It's a bit strange. It's a bit of an odd choice, purple, don't you think?
It's an odd choice for the jungle.
It is, because he's not... I mean, he tries at various times in this movie to be stealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in a purple
suit.
But he's
not. He's purple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Why is it purple? I mean, it must have been, well, it's purple from the comic books, but why did the comic books choose purple? Is there a reason?
All I can imagine is that back in the day, a lot of comic books could only do five colours, couldn't they?
Hmm. Would purple be one you'd choose?
It seems like... it's very odd. It's very odd, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's not very well camouflaged.
He's not, no. In a jungle that's green.
And considering he's called the Phantom.
Yes. You'd think he'd be wearing a black suit, wouldn't you, really? Would be more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Or orange and call him the Phantom.
Satsuma?
No, it's just the way I'm sitting.
Hey. Saturday night, here we go.
Yes, he's got his purple. I don't mind it. It's simple.
Yeah. Yeah, it's simple. Okay, I can live with it. It's fine. I've seen worse.
Yeah. We have, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they start to hear drums.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see, a close-up of the Phantom and his wolf, who's called Devil.
Yeah. Yeah. This wolf gives a great performance.
Actually, I generally thought that when he's later running on the horse, mm-hmm. And the wolf is running alongside. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder where the trainer is for that, to make him keep running mm-hmm. alongside. Unless the trainer is actually on the horse, it's not really Billy Zane. That would have,
I thought you were going to...
Unless the trainer's like an 80-year-old woman.
I thought you were going to say, I genuinely thought you were going to say, unless the trainer is the horse.
Well... stranger things have happened in nature. Maybe the horse is a wolf whisperer. Oh, no, it's, the horse. Yeah, the wolf. Come as a package. Sorry, that's just the way it is.
Who was that, Fuzzy Bear? Yeah. He's either there.
Yeah. Did you not know he's a wolf whisperer? Yes, he tells bad jokes and he's a wolf whisperer.
Wow.
Not used in the Muppet Show that much.
I can understand why, really, you know.
Yeah, because he'd eat the other Muppets. the Devil, though. I mean, if you're going to call a dog a name, that pretty much defines you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I call it? Devil?
Well, you know, he's the Phantom. He's supernatural. Devil, you know, I suppose.
Yeah.
I get it.
Could be
better. Yeah.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, I'm the Phantom and this is my wolf, Jadis. Oh, okay.
He's striking fear into the hearts of man.
Jadis, good girl. It's a boy. Okay. Don't know what's going on now.
Especially in the 1930s. Wow. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
So it all kicks off, doesn't it?
It does. And it's revealed that Quill killed the Phantom years ago.
But how could he have done that, Colin, when the Phantom's still running around?
Don't know. It's confusing, isn't it? Time travel.
Yeah. It's almost like... I'm sure that the structure of a movie wouldn't allow us to have to wait until the very last scene or almost the very last scene of a movie to explain all this. I mean, that would be...
What, you mean a modern movie?
No, I mean this movie.
Or any movie.
See,
what?
He doesn't really explain it until the very end of the movie.
No, but it's called a mystery.
We'll talk about that when we get to that scene.
It's like every 10th per episode of a TV show that sets something up and then doesn't reveal it until the 10th episode so they can fill 9 episodes with bumps.
I get that, but this isn't a 10 part series. It's a hour and 40 minute movie.
I think you need to allow some mystery in your life, Paul. Yeah. I think what the problem is the mystery's gone from your life and you resent this film for trying to introduce some to you.
I don't resent this film.
You do.
We'll find out.
You're taking it personally.
We'll find out. So there's a fight and a chase in the truck.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Which again reminded me of Raiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And during the fight, Phantom sees a tattoo on Quill.
Mm-hmm. He
right?
does.
and he recognizes the tattoo. Mm-hmm. Now, I got a question of this. Secret Brotherhoods really should not have tattoos.
Well, not in places where you can see them, at least.
All right. So you're saying like under a shirt or something is a good... On the bum is a good place for a tattoo.
Yeah, right on one of the cheeks.
Can you imagine that as initiation for your secret society?
Drop them.
Yeah, you're a society of cutthroat killers. Oh, by the way, we need to tattoo your ass.
What?
Oh, yeah, what? okay. Yeah.
Well, you need to tattoo my ass. Well, we don't need to.
No, we want to. Well, he does. Gary wants to. That's all Gary does in the society. Tattoos asses. We've tried to stop him.
Cut to Gary. He's just rocking backwards and forwards.
with a tattoo gun in his hand, buzzing.
And it's not the gun that's buzzing.
No, it's not.
He doesn't do well initially, does he? The Phantom. He's not exactly good at what he's doing, is he? In this opening action sequence.
Well, what do you want him to do? Kill Quill? I mean, if he kills everybody at the beginning of the film, this is a very short film.
Well, he doesn't kill anyone, does he, in the movie? He's a non-killer.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
No, it is. Yeah, it is good, yes. I'm not criticising it, but he has trouble with one guy at the start of the movie. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's just it's a tough battle. You know, sometimes you have your off days.
Is that what it is?
It's an off day.
He woke up in the wrong side of the cave that morning, did he?
Well, he'd been sitting on that chair for so long that his joints are stiff.
He's got phantom piles.
Phantom piles?
Phantom piles. And trust me, in that skin-tight suit, it's not good, really.
Yeah, but that if they're phantom piles, that suggests they're not really there.
Well, you know, maybe they're maybe the suit holds them in. And that's why they're phantom, because they're only half out, you know.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That was amazing. That tough.
Glad you think so.
I do love the lack of CGI in this movie. I know it was done before CGI was a thing. That's why I like it, is what I'm saying.
Right, so you saw the truck hanging. I like the way it hangs upside down.
Yeah. And it builds, doesn't it? Because things keep snapping and it flips over and then he's hanging with the
kid. Which is a very Spielberg thing to do.
It is. It's the Jurassic Park building when the truck's falling down on top of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's good.
Yeah.
So, the truck falls, but of course, the Phantom escapes.
Yeah.
And the remaining men, except Quill, are arrested by the Jungle Patrol.
Yes. The most British of British men that I've ever seen.
Yes, Captain Horton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who dismisses stories about the ghost that walks.
I wonder why.
Maybe we'll find out.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah. So our Phantom does some reading, doesn't he? Has a nice library in his cave.
He does. It's good that we get a scene where he's being patched up, because it's a perfect time for some exposition.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He talks about the skulls being three of them, jade, silver, and gold. Worst gladiator ever. Best gifts for the Son of Christ.
That's true.
What is frankincense?
I thought
you'd rather have jade, wouldn't you?
I always thought it was a universal monster, but it's not, is it? It's something completely
it's not,
different.
No,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
yeah, no, yeah. And the other one, what is it?
Myrrh.
So you get jade, silver, and gold, as you said. Yeah, they would make good gladiators, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
Also make good medals at the Olympics.
Who wants the jade?
Instead of bronze, you get jade. Jade sounds great.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be able to tell, would I?
No, that's true. No. Yeah. No.
Can we leave that there? Because we've never mentioned it before.
Yeah, well you just can't distinguish metals.
That's right. I have trouble.
Or diamonds or jewels or anything like that. That's the problem.
Aluminium?
It's a weird affliction. Aluminium.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot where you live.
So when these skulls are placed together, they harness an energy more explosive than anything known to man.
I bet I know something that's more explosive than anything known to man.
What's that?
I've seen you when you've had a kebab. Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's why you're colorblind.
Yeah, I was fine until then.
Yep.
Destroyed everything.
The skulls were separated and lost when the villages were raided by pirates, the Seng Brotherhood. And now there is no trace of them. But that web tattoo indicates that Quill is a member of the Seng Brotherhood.
Mm.
And then we get the Phantom's old fella turn up.
Yeah, so this is his dad, played by Patrick McGowan. So I'm guessing that he's not really there, is he?
No, he's a ghost. He's magic.
So he is really there. He's a ghost. It's not in his head.
Well, I assume he's not mental. I mean, that's a very different film. If the guy's... All right, so what you're saying is the Phantom has mental problems.
Are you telling me that the guy that runs around in a bright purple suit in the jungle doesn't have mental issues?
I can see the strength of your argument now.
No, I like the idea that he's probably there, that he's a ghost. Yeah,
he's like a Jedi spirit.
Because we get moments where he's talking and he's not in the room with him. I mean, that's if that is mental illness, you're committed to that because you're having you're hearing conversations where he's on his own.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So his dad tells him that the skull has now fallen in the hands of the Brotherhood, and his dad says, "You need to get this back." Right.
He does.
Of course, the servant, who's patching up the Phantom, can't see his dad. So we know that only the Phantom can see his dad. Mm-hmm.
And
so
I think that's,
maybe you're right.
I think that's why I assumed that it was kind of some kind of...
Mental
illness or something. Well, mental illness is a very strong way of putting it, Colin.
That's what you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop putting words into my mouth.
Oh, like a ghost?
Like a ghost, yes.
Okay. So there we cut to Long Island, New York, and a Miss Diana Palmer comes home to a big house, mansion.
Yeah, this was actually Hugh Hefner's house, you know, that they used.
That's right. Yes, I read that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Hugh Hefner is a fan of the Phantom.
Well, he's dead now, isn't he?
He is a Phantom.
Yes. Yeah, but unfortunately, there's no Bonnie girls running around in this scene.
Not a single one.
Not a single one. But we do get Bill Smitrovich, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, you like that?
I do. I like a bit of Bill Smitrovich. I can't say his name, but, you know, I like it.
I'm just like seeing you say his name. The fact it's like watching an athlete prepare to run.
I'll do it again.
Bill... I can see you warming up every time you get to the Bill. It's the Bill. It's the warm-up, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're like going, and then you're off.
Bill Smitrovich. There you go.
Bless you.
Yes.
You're doing a lot of sniffing again. What's this happened? This hasn't happened for like 100 episodes and now you brought it back. What? Is this your thing again?
Well, I might cut it out and this will be irrelevant. So you don't, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got to say that it's a pretty good cast with the exception of one person who I think is miscast.
Oh, he's not a treat?
He's not a treat, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
We'll get to him in a second, won't we?
Yeah, we will. So we learn that Diana's just come back from the Yukon. So we learn that she's an explorer. Mm-hmm. She's a, you know, a modern woman of the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. They try to do that, don't they?
I have a thing about this film is that the female characters of the film, of course, we know from, what's her name, from The Hunger Games. What's her name? I can't remember her name.
I need to say Kat Dealey, but that's something completely different, isn't it?
Yeah,
Stevens? No, it's not him.
No.
Katniss. Catnip? That one.
The actor's name.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence.
Her name. We know from Jennifer Lawrence that there were no strong female leads until she came
along. That's right.
So it surprised me greatly to see that this film from 1996 had two strong female leads who are doing a lot of the fighting and kicking in this film.
You say two. I'll have to disagree with you on that one, I think.
Why?
They try with Diana. Her name is Diana, isn't it?
Yeah, Diana Powell.
They try with Diana to make her strong. They have little moments where she's kicking and punching people and she's a bit, you know, stands on her own two feet. But when you really look at it, all she is in this movie is the damsel in distress.
Oh, you mean because she's hostage of Sala, but she's hostage of a woman. She's not hostage of another man, really.
But she's still the damsel in distress. She's constantly being saved by the Phantom in this movie.
But she also helps in her rescue.
Yeah,
which she's not running behind him.
Which is
screaming.
Why I'm saying that, yeah, they try. They do try, but they keep falling back onto that trope that, and lots of movies do it, and they still do it to this day, where, you know, they need a reason for the Phantom
if he was like watching, he's like, I'm going to go in there and risk, oh, she's out. It'd be a weird film.
It would. I mean, I get it from a narrative point of view, yes. But I don't think she's as progressive as they really wanted her to be.
But I think she's better than most of 1996.
Yeah, I would say that. But I think the Sala character's better written. Although again, she's still a trope. She's the slightly kinky henchwoman, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. I saw Austin Powers then.
You did, yeah. Groovy, baby.
Yeah.
So they're having this big party, and her uncle is a newspaper owner.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And he's friends with, like, the commissioner, mm-hmm. police commissioner, and the mayor. But Drax is also at the party, and Uncle Perma, he doesn't like Drax. He knows Drax is up to no mm-hmm. good, right? But Drax is also friends with the commissioner and the mayor.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of backstabbery going on in various.
Yeah, and Perma is working on a story to try and, like, get the truth about Drax.
And this is where we joked about it, but I thought that Treat Williams was a little too much at times in this.
I wondered if he wasn't enough.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted more. I always want more, though.
The thing that I kept thinking about at the back of my mind was Timothy Dalton in The Rocketeer. And I kept thinking to myself, he would have done this much better.
But Timothy Dalton does more in The Rocketeer. He's like a actor prancing around doing lines all the time.
Yeah, but it just isn't...
I don't think... You want less. I just think you don't want Treat Williams.
It felt like something from... Don't get me wrong, I love the show, but it felt like something from Batman 66. What he was doing. Mm. Which is fine, but he's the only one doing it. It just didn't seem to fit right.
Right. I agree there is a problem with his character, mm-hmm. but I think we have a disagreement of why there is a problem.
Okay. Right.
But I think we both agree that other actors would be better in the role.
And it's just, I mean, I like Treat Williams, you know, he recently passed away, didn't he, not long ago. He's very good in lots of things, but this, I just don't think it suited him.
Yeah, I agree with.
All this stuff in the house, though, I did think it made the film grind to a bit of a halt.
Oh, I didn't notice. That's one of the things about this film is that I watched this and I thought, oh, that was a great hour. You know, it felt like an hour, even though it was 90 minutes. Yeah, it flew by for me. I was all happy.
This scene just felt like, you know, we get a moment where it's just a group of old men sitting around in chairs talking to each other. And it just seemed to just... It just kind of stopped for for a few minutes?
No, I didn't feel that at all. In fact, it felt like a 1930s type film, 1940s film.
Yeah, no, I get that feeling.
Of where people are discussing stuff. And I didn't feel anything about the delay at all. So I think this is more to do with your attention deficiency disorder that you've got now. Thanks to all the TikTok videos you watch.
Oh, yeah, I'm always on it. I can't get enough of it. Yeah.
Says more about you than about the film.
I love it.
No, I thought it was fine.
No.
It's about the politics of the situation.
Mm-hmm. I suppose maybe it didn't work for me because you've seen this film a lot more than I have, haven't you?
Possibly.
I've seen it once.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen it more than once.
And you know when you come into something and you're not invested in it, so you're just being taken along by the movie. And I was enjoying all the Phantom stuff, and then it got to this, and then I was dealing with all these characters that I didn't really care about. So it just took me out of it for a minute. I kind of drifted a little bit.
I do think that there is something that affects our opinion of films, and it's to do with the podcast. Is that there is often occasion when I will sit down and go, I've got to watch this film that Paul's making me watch. And I've got to do these notes for this podcast. All right, let's just get this done. And you do it, and you don't enjoy it. And I think that affects the film. And it's not the film's fault, it's the situation you're in. Whereas for this one, I was like, it was during the week, and I was like, I've got 90 minutes with nothing to do. What should I do? I was like, oh, I'm going to watch the Phantom. Why not? And I'll just bang the notes out while I'm watching it. Excellent. You know, and so I'm more tuned to enjoying the film because I wanted to see it at that point in time rather than it being a chore.
I think you're right. And without giving anything away, I think that going back to our previous episode where we did Phantom of the Paradise, I think we're kind of reversed on this one. And it's all down to what you've just described, I think. The fact that this is...
Yeah, I agree.
This is your movie, and I'm not as familiar with it, so it was a little bit more of a slog for me. Not all the way through, not all the time, but at times it was. But we'll talk about it at the end when we do the summing up.
Well, it's about time it happened to you, Paul.
It's not always me. I don't force you into anything.
Oh, it's always you. All the
I don't hold you
down. Watch.
You're too far away.
Do you?
I've got long arms.
Yeah. You've been accused of that before. So the uncle is telling the mayor and the commissioner in this important, vital scene that's exciting and moves the film along at a quick pace. That he intends to go to the jungle because Drax has been gathering esoteric artifacts and researching obscure literature of ancient power. And this information was given to him by a special collections librarian. But Diana volunteers to go instead because we've already learned that she goes to the Yukon. She likes doing this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the mayor is in league with Drax and tells him that these people, they know too much.
Yeah.
So we see Diana boarding a seaplane called the Orient Clipper. And this is reported to Drax. Back at Drax HQ, he kills the librarian by having him look into a microscope. Good scene, right?
Yeah, it is. As soon as this Dr. Fleming guy walks into the meeting room, I thought, this isn't going to end well, is it? Particularly as he's showing you the thing 2 seconds before with the blade coming out of it. It's interesting because I've been watching a lot of eye gouging lately.
You've been watching a lot of eye gouging?
Yeah, well, I mean, not in real life, movie-wise, you know.
Just on YouTube? It's just your thing that you're doing now?
No, I mentioned in the last podcast, I've been watching a lot of Italian horror, and they seem to love a good eye gouging.
It's the thing.
It's
is
a
it?
Thing that they enjoy. Hmm. I was surprised to see another eye gouging in this movie. Yeah.
One of the earliest pieces of film is an eye being cut, right?
That is true. Yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Must be a thing.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Thank you. What?
Yeah, because knives pop out the microscope and kill the librarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was quite a clever way to kill somebody. It's quite fun.
Yeah, as long as you don't forget.
Yeah.
You actually want to look at your microscope.
I'm not sure.
I mean, you could obviously never use that microscope for anything other than killing people.
No. And I bet when he was when he realized that he could actually fit it into some kind of scenario where he was going to have to use it, he was like, I can't wait for this.
He'd been waiting for years. He's like, I've never had anyone killed by this. I bought this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've no use for it.
Yeah, yeah. He's like...
He's just going to be, hey, John, look, John, look, microscope, there's some good pictures. And I'm like, no, why not, John, go on.
Realises he's bought the wrong one and it just leaves black eye line around his eye. It's
not yeah. Or he comes home one day and Gladys's cleaner is just dead on the floor. He's like, oh.
Another one.
Looked in the microscope. Yeah. I really should put it away or put it in a box or something when I'm not using it. Leaving it on display is just going to cause problems.
It is an accident waiting to happen, Colin. It is.
So the seaplane comes under attack from biplanes. With the seaplane coming under attack, the Phantom is listening to the emergency signal that they are sending. And so a group of female pilots board the plane led by Sarla, and she wants to... take Diana Perma, kidnap her, and will kill anybody who gets in her way.
She will.
And Diana agrees to go because she doesn't want to see other people on the plane murdered. Then we learn, that Captain Horton knows about the Phantom all along.
Yeah, and it's very Batman Commissioner Gordon-ish, this, isn't it? Especially the way that he would just sort of appear and disappear when his back's turned.
Yeah, and I assume this kind of thing is in the comic books.
It must be. Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing if all this stuff is directly taken from the comic books, how much the stuff that is more well-known now lifted from this. You know, there's a lot of Batman in this. There's a lot of, you know, other things in this. And it's just interesting seeing it.
Yeah. So you maybe think that maybe Batman borrows things from... The Phantom.
Oh, of course. I mean, he borrowed from everything, didn't he? Bob Kane, in particular, he borrowed from Zorro. He borrowed from the Shadow, you know.
And that time when Batman went through the square window.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. When he borrowed from Play School.
With Big Ted.
Yes. And Jemima. Yes.
She was there. Yeah.
She was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. She was helping.
Yeah.
Him.
And good old Derek Griffiths.
Yeah, he was there too. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah.
So we learned that it's Quill working with Sarla who wants to kidnap Diana for Drax.
That's right, yeah.
Meanwhile, thanks to Zack, the Phantom finds the place where the seaplanes have landed and where they are holding Diana on an old ship.
He does, and he stealthily, in his purple suit,
He bars the ship. And... Sarla is interested in Diana's boots, and the letter falls out of the boots.
It's interesting as well how everyone seems to be frightened of the Phantom.
Well, he's a legend.
He's not that scary, though, is he? He's a guy in a big purple suit.
No, he's not scary, but the legend is.
But the fact that he's immortal and you can't kill him, that kind of thing. Yeah. All right, okay. What do you think of Billy Zane's performance in this? What do you think of Billy Zane?
I like it. Do you know why I like it? I like it for the reason that Joe Dante doesn't like it. I like the fact that he plays the joke seriously.
Yeah, I
like the dry delivery.
And there's a little twinkle in his eye all through the movie as well, isn't he? You can tell he's enjoying himself. Yeah.
Yes, and he's got the balance perfectly correct.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. I'm not the greatest Billy Zane fan, but I do like him in this.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't go running to a Billy's.
No.
So the Phantom boards the ship and he meets the female pilots in the ladies' changing room. And then he drops in on Sarah and Diana. And he's like, what is this ship full of women?
Yeah, it's a good line. Yeah.
yeah. And then he says to tie her up and Diana punches Sarah out and he goes, oh, dumb.
I like the moment as well when she's pointing the gun at him and he just whips it out of her hand.
Oh, yeah, it's so fast you don't even notice it.
And it looks real. Doesn't look like that's... Yeah. Looks like they really did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they run around, but eventually Quill captures them. But Devil, or Janice, as I like to call the dog mm-hmm. now, attacks Quill, and Diana punches her way out as well.
She does do a little bit. Now, one of the problems I have with this film is that I do find the fighting scenes to be a little bit stagey.
You do?
Yeah, there's worse later during the finale of the movie.
Stagey like a 1930s Republic serial, you think?
I guess. Do you think that's what they were going for?
What do you think, Paul? Mm. Nothing is done by accident in film.
It felt like it was heavily rehearsed when it's not supposed to look like it's rehearsed.
Oh, you know? Okay. You feel like there's a lot of choreography going on that you're seeing. Yeah. That you're seeing.
It didn't look natural.
Right. Didn't bother me, but not going to argue with you on that one.
I did like the fact that a lot of it was like a one shot thing.
Right.
Yeah, that was interesting because you don't see that very much.
No, not these days when certain actors clearly can't do what they're supposed to be doing. So
what is the famous one with Liam Neeson where it takes him 50 cuts to climb over a fence or something?
Yeah, or what's her name in the Marvel films?
Oh, Black Widow.
Yeah. Which clearly, I think she's only in 5% of that film, isn't she?
Yeah.
Most of it's a stunt double.
I mean, I'd say it's a problem that I have with the film. It's not a deal breaker. Because there isn't really a lot of fighting in this movie, is there? It's just...
No, it's much more cerebral.
Yeah.
Film.
Yeah, so we get the wolf.
Mm, yep. Leaps into action. So then they jump into one of the seaplanes. Mm-hmm. And the Phantom, he can pilot a plane. Diana Palmer says, of course you can.
Mm-hmm. And some great aerial photography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's flying around. And meanwhile, Devil gets the horse and they both run along.
When
following the plane,
when Devil walked up to the horse and they looked at each other, I so wanted it to cut to the fact that the dog was riding the horse.
just sat there with the reins in his mouth.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, you know what would have been more amazing? If the horse was riding Devil.
Jesus Christ, my back.
Devil's like, I think we got this wrong.
But it's a good action sequence. It's a bit silly, but you know, I have to say that this action sequence with the plane, where they jump off the plane onto the horse, and then the plane crashes
because the plane's been shot because it's losing fuel.
Up to this point, I've been kind of sitting on the fence, but this got me. This sequence pulled me in.
So you're on the fence to not liking it.
I was enjoying it, but not enough, I'll say.
Mm, all right.
But then this kind of really over-the-top, silly, pulpy action sequence kind of got me a little bit.
Right. Yeah,
pulled me in a bit more. Just
grabbed you by the nads.
Just when I thought I was out, I was pulled back in. Yeah.
Nice. Good reference. So they're chased by a truck, but natives help them escape.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes her to his secret hideout.
Yeah, he's got a skull cave.
Yes, yeah, haven't we all?
I've got several littered all over the place.
Why do you need more than one?
Well, you never know where you're going to wake up, do you? It's me, remember.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah. He gives Sophie to remember him by some black pearls. Captain Horton arrives. Mm-hmm. I do like the no smoking in the skull cave.
Yeah, and the way he's looking at him with such disgust as well. The Phantom's looking at him like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Where did the Phantom get his suit, by the way? Did he make it himself or did he send away for it? Because, I mean, he's in the jungle. I mean, where did he get the spandex?
Well, this is the thing. He wasn't always in the jungle.
Oh, because he goes backwards and forwards.
Well, he was educated in New York.
Yeah, but...
Don't forget. Because he was friends with Diana Palmer.
So where did he get the suit?
Taylor's in New York.
But every Phantom.
He just went in.
Every Phantom wear the same suit?
I'm guessing there's more than one suit, Paul, because don't they get damaged? They're not magical suits.
Ah, but if...
and they'd have to fit.
If they are magical
I mean,
suits,
let's be honest, as good as Patrick McGoohan is, he's not the same size as Billy
Zane. He's not, no. If they were magical suits, though, that would be an explanation. You've solved it, it for would. Me. You've solved it for me. I'm happy now.
But by just saying they're magical suits.
Yeah. He rips it, get a new one, just another one appears.
See, now, this is the opposite of our Superwoman conversation. We're taking the opposite sides. Because I'm saying these are made, right. You're saying they're magical, mm-hmm. And Superwoman, you were saying that she stole the clothes, and I said it's just her powers, she magicked them up.
Yeah, and I still don't go with that, but okay.
Yeah, well, you're wrong, you're an idiot. But
oh, by the way, it's Supergirl, not Superwoman. She's not a woman, she's a girl.
But she is by now.
Oh, by now she's like 50 or something.
Yeah, by now she's super granny, which is a very different thing. It was a very different show.
Wasn't she Scottish?
Yes, she was. Very Scottish. Yeah. About as Scottish as you could possibly get without being racist. Probably now would be classed as racist.
I think it would, yes. All right, okay. And so then we cut to New York, and this period street shots, they're a thing of beauty, aren't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They look good. Yeah. I assume it's Universal Studios with a matte painting.
Yeah, but it looks great. It looks fantastic. It does. And it looks real.
Lots of good cars.
It looks real, yeah.
Yeah, it does, yeah. In the Drax building, Drax is taking the receipt of the Silver Skull. I like that Sally used toothpaste to try and clean it.
Yeah. Well, you would. It works.
Hmm. Yeah, of course. Drax is annoyed that Diana got away and got home okay. Even though, and Quill tells him that Diana was rescued by the Phantom, even though the Phantom should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now like debating that conversation. And Drax kind of thinks that Sally has a thing for the Phantom.
Yeah, and that's going to sort of come into play later in the movie, which surprised me.
Yeah.
The way that it plays out.
Yeah, but Sailor believes the Phantom is in love with Diana.
She does. She does. I didn't see it coming, what happens later, I have to say. Because I had a feeling that... Because I couldn't remember what happens to her character. And I just assumed that she went the way of someone like Honor Top in Goldeneye, you know.
But curiously, not the way that Pussy Galore goes in Goldfinger, which has the female
pilot. Yeah, I've never thought of that. You know, never occurred to me.
<All right>. Okay.
I'll tell you what she's doing, though. Catherine Zeta-Jones is doing her best Patricia Quinn impersonation in this movie.
You'll have to remind me.
Patricia Quinn is, she's always the feisty one in things like, she's in Rocky Horror, she plays Magenta. And I think she's in I, Claudius. She's in the scenes with Patrick Stewart. She's always quite feisty and quite full on.
Got it.
You know, she's almost channeling her in this movie, Catherine Zeta-Jones. I thought.
I always thought Catherine Zeta-Jones was full on.
Dear Lord.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that film she did with Sean Connery?
Oh yes, where they were jewel thieves or something like that. Yeah,
cat burglars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of tight black leather, I remember. And that was Connery.
Yeah, I was suddenly in the mood to watch that.
Are you?
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Don't know why. Might have to dig it out if I can find it. I got nothing else. I'm just in the mood to watch it. Just
stop the podcast.
I'm
going to go watch it now.
Yeah, bye. So we've learned that the Phantom is now in New York, but as Kit Walker, and he has a taxi driver who he pays in rubies.
Yeah, if he's got no money, how did he get this suit and these rather snazzy sunglasses and hat that he's wearing?
Again, because he spent time in New York.
Oh, you think he's just...
He just got out of the closet.
All right. Yep. All right, I'll go with that.
Okay. Meanwhile, Drax is doing a presentation, like a PowerPoint presentation on skulls.
He is, yes.
And I like the fact they all clap at the end. Like they you can see that like they feel like they need to clap, even though they don't know why they're clapping.
Yeah, I think they're kind of slightly frightened of him as well. Some of them, not all of them.
Yeah, which is another problem is because he's not really very frightening. No.
But this scene around the table, kind of the boardroom scene, reminded me of the Joker scene in Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman, where the Joker's talking to all the other crime bosses, and then there's one that doesn't want to play ball.
Isn't it every Bond film pretty that much has a villain, yeah, where one of them, I mean, even Austin Powers does it, where there's one that always goes, you should know, if the great big villain calls you into a conference room,
yes,
you agree with him. You don't be the one that goes, you know what? You know what? I'm sick of your schemes. I'm not taking part of this. Because you know that you're going to get in the elevator, the floor's going to open, and you're going to a fiery inferno.
Definitely. The one that sprang to my mind when you were just describing that then was the Airship in A View to a Kill.
Yes.
Yeah. The guy slides out and just falls out of it. Yeah.
Always agree when you're in a conference room with a villain.
Yeah, because you can always do something later, but just get out of that.
Yeah. Just agree. Yeah. Mm. Oh, take over the world. Great idea. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not coming back here again. Yeah. So, of course, like you said, Ray isn't happy. That's the name of the guy, mm-hmm, and he's got a weird attitude to Skulls and Forces of Evil. You know,
yeah,
he just doesn't want to be involved for some reason. Mm. And so Drax chucks a spear and kills him.
Yeah, I like the moment where he's talking to the rest of them, and he's trying to pull the spear out of the guy's back because it's stuck in the wall.
Yeah, damages the wall.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the newspaper room that's owned by Uncle Perma, mm-hmm, as we call him, Kit Walker is waiting for Diana, and it turns out that they were friends at college.
Yeah. This guy,
and they learn that
this guy playing this character that we don't see very much, his name's Jimmy Wells.
Oh, the one that reveals that the Jade Skull is at the Museum of World History, and he kind of fancies Diana.
Yeah.
He's like Diana's unofficial boyfriend.
This actor playing this character, he feels like he's walked right out of a 1930s serial. The way that he's playing the lines, he could be an actor from that era.
Yeah,
he gets it completely.
Yeah, it's like the file you would find appearing alongside Humphrey Bogart or William Holden,
exactly,
or somebody,
exactly,
in those kind of films.
Yeah.
So they head over to the Museum of World History,
mm-hmm,
and we learn that Kit vanished when, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a thing between him and Diana. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, I had to go home and take over the family business.
Yep.
Meaning the Phantomering.
Is that what he calls it? The Phantomering.
Phantomering. Yeah.
There's the title of the episode.
The Phantomering.
Yeah. It sounds like something Ricardo Montalban would say on Fantasy Island.
I am Phantomering.
Yeah. The Phantomering.
The skull. I like the fact that the skull, the Jade Skull, it was hidden because it was on display in the wrong place in the wrong time period. Mm-hmm. So it was hidden, but in plain sight, just nobody knew what it was.
The best place to hide things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like when you were a kid, you used to hide your porn magazines in magazines of Crash, right?
I was
right alongside.
I wonder where you were going there, and I'll all right.
Well, did you think I was going to reveal a deep secret?
I wasn't sure where you were going there, Colin. It's like, whoa. Where is this going? All right.
So Kit smashes the display. Mm-hmm. But Drax turns up with a lot of heavies and guns, and then his bag starts smoking, and he brings the skulls together and says, show me the power!
He does, because beams come out of them.
Does, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the beam points to a map that's handily on the wall.
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't even
in the map room.
It wasn't, right next to where the skull's been hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, yeah. So they eventually they force Kit and Diana into a car, and the taxi driver, who quickly had the rubies valued, he's like, "Whoa, this guy! I like this guy."
Mm-hmm.
So he follows them.
Yeah, he could be useful.
He could be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the Drax building, they beat up Kip. Silas slaps Diana.
Yeah, and doesn't, when they take Kit away, doesn't Sala say that she wants his body when they, after they've killed him?
She does, yeah.
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 My kind of woman.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you like a woman who wants you dead.
That's the only ones I've ever known, Colin.
That's true, yeah. I mean, they just spent a few hours with you.
Well, I mean, it doesn't start off that way, but, you know, by the end of it, you know.
Once they get to know you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 that's how they feel. Mm-hmm. That's right. They take Kit to the observation deck to throw him off, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's what the plan is, right? Ah, but he gets away and then puts on his phantom gear.
Yeah, I love this comic book trope of the fact that the hero always changes into his super suit before he actually does any superheroing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had it under his clothes.
Yeah. They don't do it very often in modern superhero movies now. Any chance they've got to have the main actor not wear the suit, they don't. They'll do it.
Is that because they think the suit's silly?
I think it's just because they don't want to cover up the actor's face. But if you're paying Tom Holland, you're going to make sure that you see Tom Holland's face rather than Spider-Man's mask most of the time, aren't you?
Well, no, that's not true, because 90% of Spider-Man is the CGI or the stunt double.
Yeah, now it is, yeah. I should have
Tom Holland, he gets paid $20 million to turn up, do 2 days' work, and then bugger off.
I should have said back in the day, someone like Tobey Maguire in his Spider-Man movies, his mask was always getting torn or ripped, and then...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these days it's just easier to do some terrible CGI.
I guess so.
Yeah. So, Kit gets away, puts on his phantom gear, as we said. But, aha, Drax finds the location of the last skull, and it is in the Devil's Vortex.
We've all been there.
We have, mm-hmm. Yeah. He believes there's an enchanted island there.
An enchanted island?
Yeah, it meant uncharted. It could be enchanted. It's lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen
it. Yeah,
it's nice.
Yeah. Looks nice. Yeah.
Police are alerted, and Diana's taken as phantom insurance, the best kind of insurance.
The one you don't have to pay for.
Yes.
I love the bit when he was running through the hotel lobby and he stopped to pick up the purse that the old woman had dropped.
Yes, because he's a kind man, and then he's running on top of cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he takes a horse.
Yeah, I enjoyed this chase sequence with the two.
It's a good chase. I like those heavy police bikes. They really look solid.
Yeah, it was an interesting look, wasn't it? It was good visual. Yeah, I enjoyed that. Yeah.
It goes into a zoo. The police follow, and then when a lion roars at them, they're like, "Oh, it sure as hell isn't around here." But he is, because he's friends with the animals.
He's at one with the beasts.
Yep, yep. So that makes two of you.
I'd written. The same could have been said about you, Colin, but... Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not one with the beast. The beasts are one with me.
Are they? Hang on. What?
There's
laws against that,
up.
Colin.
not on Bengala Island.
All right, okay. What happens on Bengala and stays on Bengala?
That's right, yep.
All right, okay.
Yep. The taxi takes him away. Meanwhile, the Phantom's, I mean, his dad appears in the taxi.
Yeah, he just appears anywhere, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose when you're a ghost, you could.
Well, that's the thing about ghosts, yeah, because, they're real, so they appear wherever they want.
They are real.
There's no laws about it.
No, there's not, no. There's
nothing to do with physics or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Mean, there's only one of us that's actually been interacting with a ghost, so...
Nope, there's none of us. I could categorically say none of us have. Nobody.
Going back to the action sequence that we just talked about, that we both enjoyed, when you think of 1994, this is when this movie was made, right? 94?
I've been saying 96. Have I been 2 years out?
Mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
Doesn't feel like it's that old, but when you think about it, really, the way that... storytelling in these kind of movies has changed so much from then to now. Because you think about all these kind of movies from back then, even Batman, it had action sequences, but the action sequences punctuated the story, and they were used to tell the story. And it's completely different today, where like 90% of comic book movies are just prolonged action sequences that just go on, you know.
Right.
And so it's, you know, they've scaled the story back for the action sequences. It's interesting watching a movie from this era, which is a comic book movie.
Yeah.
It's completely different. And I've got to say, as someone who still likes comic book movies, I prefer this. This way of doing it. This way of doing it. Yeah.
Well, I'll just give you a second to get off your soapbox.
You wouldn't be able to tell if I did.
didn't know we were at Speaker's Corner.
Well, if I can't do it here, where can I do it? Nobody else listens
to me. That's true. Yeah. Nope, no one's going to listen. No. You're right. Mm. Right. So it's revealed that the gun belt that Quill, I don't think we've mentioned it, but Quill has a phantom gun belt.
Because he killed one.
And it turns out that it was the father, mm-hmm. it was Patrick Begoin that he'd killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They arrive at the dock. The phantom hitches a ride on the seaplane's pontoon.
He does love hanging off a plane, doesn't he?
Who doesn't?
Oh, is that what you do in your spare time, is it?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Oh. I'm always hanging around off planes.
Mm. Hanging around off planes or hanging around planes?
Oh, hanging off them. Don't hang around them.
All right, okay.
That'd be weird.
It would, yeah.
Yeah, I like to dangle.
So I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, I like to dangle the angle, as they say. Yeah. As they say in the flying fraternity.
Is that right? we get some more gorgeous location shots in this, don't we?
Oh, sorry, I thought you had gone back to Catherine Zeta-Jones.
That too.
Yeah,
It's a pirate cove, or cave, cove, same thing, isn't it?
Nope.
Is it not?
But go on, no.
Is it a cave? Or a cove.
Could be a cave and a cove.
A cave and a cove. Or a cove and a cave.
Yeah.
All right.
Cove cave, yeah. Cove could cave. Be a cave all and right. a cove.
Okay.
Either way, it's full of pirates.
It is. Everywhere. They're everywhere.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these pirates, they're obviously a bit angry, as pirates tend to be.
They are. And don't we get the merest hint and suggestion of casual rape once again, rearing its head? When
we do.
Yeah.
But only slightly.
Only slightly. That one of the pirates says, "This one, she's mine. She is."
Well, that doesn't mean rape. It could be that he just wants her around.
I guess. But then, doesn't Sailor say to Diana, "We have to stick together." Yeah.
Quill reveals his tattoo of the Brotherhood, so obviously the pirates accept him as one of their own. So they're not going to kill everybody. And we're revealed to the great Kabai Seng, the leader of the Seng Brotherhood.
This guy is out chewing Treat Williams. That sounded weird, didn't it? But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that film.
Yeah, he's going for it big time, this guy, isn't he?
He is. He's doing what Treat Williams should have done.
You think so?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he should notched it up to 11. So the Kabai has the third, and Drek suggests that they team up. Sorry, Kabai has the third skull. I should point out what he has the third of. And Drek suggests they team up.
Yeah.
But then the Kabai goes, wait. Yeah, no, there's actually a fourth skull, actually, which controls the power of the other three. Kind of regulates the power. Yeah. Otherwise, it's uncontrollable.
Of course.
And everyone's like, wait. A fourth skull? And we haven't mentioned this character, Mancini, but he's the one of the...
Henchmen.
The Cabal. Yeah, yeah. Henchmen, He pulls a gun out and everything turns to crap at this point. People are firing at each other, right? They fire a cannon at him.
Yeah, and it blasts him right across the whole of the cove, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I do like the line that they used that, Quill's like, he reveals his tattoo and goes, I've killed the Phantom. And the Kabai's like, everyone's killed the Phantom. Yeah. He just bloody keeps coming back. That's the problem.
Yeah, that was a good line. It also amused me when they drag Diana out and doesn't Drax say that this is the Phantom's girlfriend or something. And someone says, oh, the Phantom has good taste. I think, have you seen him? I mean, big purple suit? I don't know about that, but all right.
I think he has a rather splendid taste in women, is what they're suggesting.
Yeah, yes. But if he did, I'm nothing against Christy Swanson. Christy Swanson, is that her name? But
yeah, go with that.
You know, if you've got steak at home, you're not going to go out for a hamburger, are you?
But what's his steak at home? The devil?
No. You know.
No, what?
Standing next to her.
Treat Williams.
I knew you were going to do that. Anyway.
Yeah. So the Phantom turns up and then they start a fist fight. He knocks out Kabai. Mm-hmm. Layada swings and hits a pirate. The sword fights. Sala knocks out pirates. You know, as I mentioned, there's no strong female action heroes until the Hunger Games. So what I'm seeing here, I just must have imagined it.
I think you did.
Yeah, must have done. Phantom sword fights with the Kabai. And then lunges at him with a sword. Phantom dodges and Kabai falls into the water to be eaten by sharks.
When will evil bad guys learn not to keep sharks as pets? They just never learn, do they?
That's true, because it always bites them in the end, right?
It does indeed, yes. Yeah. Sounds painful.
Does, yeah. Mm. Bitten by a shark.
And this is when Sala swaps sides, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. Mm. Yeah. Now, does she swap sides because she knows she's... obviously, the film kind of... You see the beginning of her switching sides when... Diana talks to her in the taxi.
Mm-hmm.
Says something like, I can't remember, something like, is this all you've got? Is this, yeah. You know? And she starts to think about it.
And then you get the moment when, like, that we said a minute ago, when she turns to Diana and says, you know, we need to stick together at this point.
Yeah,
yeah. Didn't see it coming.
It could be cynical and say she's just seeing who's losing and who's winning at the end of this.
And that would fit her character.
It would, yeah. Yeah. So, more fights. And there's a submarine.
Yeah, a little... it's kind of like a little steampunky mini-sub, isn't it?
Yeah, and I assume this is what the pirates were using to sink ships and steal the goods and things. And so they, Sarah and Diana, get in the submarine. They bugger off.
They do. They don't quite put it like
Quill and Drax are not dead, right?
No. Before Quill and Drax face off, we should say that the Phantom faces off with James Remar's character, doesn't he?
That is Quill.
And this is where he reveals that he was the one that killed Patrick McGowan.
Yeah. Don't reveal in a fight that you've killed his dad.
Yeah, it's not going to end well for you, is it?
No, there's just not. You don't want to make him angrier.
What I want to know is, right, if...
You want to know this, dude? Do you really want to know this?
I do. I really want to know.
All right. You really want to know?
Yeah, so he...
I really want to know.
So he killed Patrick McGowan. So Patrick McGowan was the current Phantom at the time.
Yes.
Was he a 60-odd-year-old guy running around in a purple suit?
No, Quill killed him like 20 years ago when he was in his 20s.
So why is he appearing as an old man, as a ghost?
Because he's a magic ghost. magic ghost age. I mean, don't the Jedi spirits in the Star Wars film age?
Yeah, but they don't age up from when they died. Do they? They tend to stay like when they died. They appear as the age that when they died. He doesn't suddenly age up, does he?
You see, your problem is, Paul, here, is that what you're realising is just because that Quill got him, shot him, doesn't mean he died then. Could have died sometime later.
So he lingered for 30 years, did he?
He lingered for 30 years.
In absolute hell,
close to death.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he got all his affairs settled and then he died.
All right. Okay. I prefer to think of a 60-odd-year-old Patrick McGowan running around in a purple suit. Just so I get my kicks.
Yeah, but not that suit. Yeah. Different suit.
Oh, yeah, because he's got... Because of the magic.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Or maybe that's just where Patrick McGowan's ghost feels like he wants to look like.
What, an old man?
Yeah.
Why would you want...
Ageist, are you?
No, but you're a... Hey, very good. All right, I'll leave it there.
I mean, you're going to be an old man eventually.
I'm only 10 years away from being 60, so... Well, I shouldn't have said that out loud, should I?
No, yeah, don't tell our listeners. We got a young audience to think about. Yeah, cut that out.
Yeah, we're, what? 25 next year, Colin? Right?
Well, I am.
Yeah.
You're 60.
I'm not. Just clarify. I'm really not.
That sounded desperate. Okay. That sounded so like someone turning 60, desperately trying to prove
I'm
them
really
not.
I'm not even 50 yet. Not for at least another week.
Yeah. No, yeah. At least one of us will remember.
Oh, here we go. I knew that was coming. All right. So James Remar's character gets disintegrated by the beam coming out of Treat Williams' skulls.
Right, because he doesn't have the fourth skull to regulate the power.
Mm-hmm. But who's got the fourth skull?
Indiana Jones?
No, isn't it the Phantom's ring?
Oh, it is. It's ring, yeah.
He's got a ring.
That's the fourth skull, and that controls the power.
It does. And they have like a wizard off, don't they?
They do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beams, lots of beams going on.
It is a sorcerer hoedown.
Drax gets disintegrated.
He does. He's gone. Mm-hmm. Poof.
Is that the noise he made?
Poof. It is. He went poof. Yeah. The Phantom, he uses like the anchor part of a chain from the submarine,
right?
And then to pull him out of the base. Mm-hmm. And the base explodes. And that's pretty much the end of it, really. Although we get a scene where obviously Diana... Well, the Phantom reveals that he is Kit, but Diana kind of knew all along.
Yeah, just before that, we also get a scene in the cave where the Phantom explains how the legend works, how he, like, it's passed along. Yeah. Which I always thought was a bit strange having right at the end of the movie.
Why? What did you want it at the beginning?
No, about... Wouldn't like the end of the second act make more sense before you get into the third act?
I don't mind it at the end. Well, you got to remember, weren't they setting it up for a trilogy?
That is true. They weren't they? Yeah.
So this is the third act of a three act film, but it's the intro to a second film.
Hey, the way that cult movies seem to be getting sequels left, right, and centre these days, you never know. We might get a Phantom sequel at some point.
With Billy Zane,
yeah. He still looks good for his age.
All right. Yeah.
If Michael King can play Batman again. Anything's possible.
That's true.
And that ended well, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it did. So, although, obviously, Diana, she's in love with Kit, mm-hmm. she can't be with him for this moment. She's going to leave with Sala.
Yeah, that's the option I would have chosen.
Yeah. It is, really? Yeah. Fair enough. So off he goes. But we learn from the voiceover, again, from the... Ghost Dad.
Mm-hmm. Ghost Dad. That. I hope it's not Ghost Dad. Diana. I hope there's no Bill Cosby in there, is there?
You know, this is the second podcast you've brought him up. I'm getting a bit worried about you.
Hey, you were the one that told me that I should watch one of his movies.
I did, yeah. You still should. It's a good film.
All right. It's a bold rock to die on, but okay.
A bold rock. The rock without
I'm mixing her. My metaphors again. That happens sometimes.
Yeah, you are a bit. So they fly off. Mm-hmm. Ghost Dad comes on and says, she'll be back one mm-hmm. day.
Or no.
And then the legend will continue because he has to have babies.
Yeah, he's basically like, get on it.
Yeah, because the legend needs to continue.
Pushy dad, you know.
A little bit, especially one for... Who's dead?
Yeah, well, yeah. And that is the end of The Phantom.
So, Paul, what did you think of The Phantom?
This is a bit of a strange one. On paper, it's everything that I should like. I mean, of either of us, I am the comic book guy, right? You would say.
That's what I call you in my text. I go, you are the comic book guy. That's how I begin every text.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay, so you enjoyed it a lot.
I like the pulpy nature of it. I like the period details. I thought it was outstanding at times.
Mm.
I liked all the physical effects that were in the movie.
Yeah, I'm not hearing many negatives so far.
The locations were great, but like you were with the Phantom of the Paradise that we covered on the last episode, I felt it was missing something, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
Right.
I don't think the action was particularly well staged at times.
Yeah, you had a problem with that, right?
The villain didn't work.
Okay.
And when your villain isn't strong in a movie like this, you've got problems, I think.
Right.
He was about as menacing as Kenneth Williams in Carry On Screaming. In fact, Kenneth Williams in Carry On Screaming is menacing compared to this.
I was going to say, I find Kenneth Williams scary.
Mm. Oh, yes. And there were a few moments in it that just felt a bit dull, I felt, to me. I liked it, but just not enough to say it's a hit, I think. I think, like you said before in our last episode, I think it's something that I need to watch again outside of reviewing it for the podcast.
Is this payback for me disliking the film?
I knew you'd say that.
Is that what this is about, Paul? Is this just comeback?
You didn't dislike Phantom of the Paradise.
Mm.
And you basically said what I'm saying now, that I think it's something that I need to watch where I'm not taking notes and I'm not looking at it as critically as what we're doing now. And I'm just experiencing it and enjoying it. And I think I'll probably get more out of it. So I think it's definitely something that I'm going, because I purchased it for this.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah.
Like Blu-ray?
I took a risk. Right?
Paul, even I don't own the Blu-ray.
And so I will watch it again. Right. I'll give it some time and I'll watch it again. And I'll probably like it more, I think. But for this right now, can't in all good conscience say it was a hit for me.
All right. Well, okay.
You tell me to fuck you now.
No, it's fine. I obviously like it more than you.
Mm-hmm.
I think Billy Zane's really good in it. I think he has the right balance of dryness.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
For the comedy that's going on. I think I like Treat Williams more than you do, but I can see what you said. And I mean, I can see where you're coming from and I understand what you're saying, but I think I still liked him, especially the little bits, the microscope bits, the getting the spear out, those kind of things. I liked the visuals, how it looked, the production design. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem with the fight sequences, and I got a feeling the next time I watch it I'll now be looking for that. So you've ruined it for me, so
you're welcome.
Enjoy that moment.
Yeah, I will, don't worry.
Yeah. Obviously I love Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Who doesn't?
And she's good in the role, with a kind of Bondy and Pussy Galore kind of role.
The fact that she's never played in a Bond movie is amazing, really, because she'd be perfect for a Bond movie.
Yeah, that is strange, isn't it? I mean, maybe it's just something she didn't want to do.
Yeah.
Like I said, for me, you had these moments where you found it dull. I didn't really notice any of those, and it flew by. There are films I've watched recently where I've looked at and watched them and gone, oh my God, is there more of this? I can't name any of them. But this flew by for me. So for me, it's a hit.
Yeah. Another split decision. Two in a row.
Yeah, I know.
Is this a trend?
This is it. This is where we fall out. We start to hate each other. You do your own podcast and I do mine. We review the same films and we just insult each other throughout the end. Oh, wait, it's just the same as this one, but separate.
We might as well just carry on.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah. So that's the end of this. Thank you for listening to this episode of Retrospection. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. And join us next time for another episode of Retrospection. Goodbye.
Bye.